You're listening to KTWH 99.5 FM, Two Harbors Community Radio Station, and I am very pleased to report that I have a special guest with me by phone. Paul Douglas is here to report on an event coming up in Duluth in the next couple, and within a week, I think. Meteorologist and entrepreneur Paul Douglas, who is also an author, and I happen to know has been speaking for a long time on climate change and really helped many Minnesotans become aware of it and what we can do about it as well. So thank you so much, Paul, for being with us here at KTWH.
It is my pleasure, Katya. Thank you for having me on, and I appreciate your interest in this subject.
Yes, well, I appreciate yours. It's mutual, and I know many listeners will feel really lucky to be listening to you. You're a well-known meteorologist around Minnesota and have written a book, which we can talk about a little later. But let's first talk about the timing. Why an event right now? The topic is going to be climate change in the Northland in 2023. Symptoms are stronger and resilience is key. This is an event that will take place at the Coppertop Church in Duluth at 10 a.m. on September 30th. So tell us a little bit. Actually, let's backtrack a little bit. Tell us about when you really started to hone in on climate change, and not only to study it, but just to talk about it with people. I would love to get a little bit of background.
Sure. No, that's the right question. And here's the dirty little secret. I think all of us have our own personal aha moment.
Yes.
When the evidence becomes sufficient and you look at that and you say, you know, I've changed my mind. Something is going on. Maybe we should listen to the professionals, the climate scientists. And by the way, I'm a meteorologist on a good day. There aren't many good days. I'm not a climate scientist, but I've been talking about this for about 25 years publicly in the Star Tribune, the newspaper in the Twin Cities, on various television stations and radio stations, sometimes to my detriment because, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was a lot of skepticism. And here's a dirty little secret. I was a skeptic, too. In the 1980s, when James Hansen, who's a climate scientist, when he testified before Congress and started talking about global warming in the 80s, I thought, well, that's interesting. I wasn't convinced.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, maybe it's a couple of hot years and it's a natural cycle and things will even out and return to normal. But by the late 90s, I started noticing changes in Minnesota's weather patterns. And at first I was like, am I imagining this? And then they would repeat. And in many cases, those signals have only amplified. They've strengthened in the last 2 to 3 decades. And so we're seeing the symptoms. Weather and climate are flip sides of the same coin. If you warm up the climate, it's going to flavor our weather. And that's happening now. And so, you know, really it was the late 90s that I started scratching my head and wondering why the weather was playing out of tune. Not every day, not every week, but with increasing frequency. The patterns were just different. And so I started delving into the climate science, and I realized, you know, fairly quickly that something was happening, and the most likely explanation was a nearly doubling of CO2, more climate-warming gases, including carbon dioxide and methane. And I started trying to connect the dots, because it was affecting the weather. It was affecting my ability to try to predict the weather. It was not an overnight epiphany, Katya. And it had nothing to do with Al Gore's documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. This was just me tracking the weather, living the weather every day. And, you know, I guess I was pretty early. Other meteorologists since then, television meteorologists around the nation, the vast, vast majority, 90, 95% now acknowledge that, yeah, climate change is real, and we've gone from theory to reality, and maybe we should pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are a person of faith. You're giving a talk in a church, and I know you've written a book about sort of the connection for you between your faith and your attention to climate. And can you outline for us, like, why is this, would you consider this a spiritual issue or a religious issue? And if so, why?
Well, look, I think everybody has their own reasons for eventually, hopefully, acknowledging the science. And some people, you know, the science is enough. And yes, in a perfect world, science should be sufficient. You look at the data, you look at the evidence, you connect the dots. I tend to listen to experts. When my toilet overflows, I don't necessarily look up a YouTube video. I actually call a plumber, an expert. I mean, I wouldn't dream of messing with, you know, our electrical system at home. I know my limits, and I defer to very smart men and women who make this their life's calling. And there are thousands of climate scientists around the world, all speaking with one voice, saying the same thing. And the evidence is incontrovertible. It's overwhelming. If you really open your eyes and open your mind and look at the data, you know, people who say, well, it's a natural cycle, and yeah, it's gotten hot before, and, you know, yeah, the Dust Bowl, we had a lot of 100-degree readings, but that was regional. It was over the Great Plains. It wasn't worldwide. Climate has changed. Yes, we've had ice ages. Yes, it's been even warmer than it is right now. But there was always a reason, either an astronomical reason or global volcanoes spewing unbelievable amounts of CO2 and methane into the atmosphere. This time around, the most likely reason is burning of fossil fuels. We've almost doubled the amount of CO2. In the last 100 years. And again, we need greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide, to keep the earth livable. It's sort of you can think of it as a blanket of chemicals, natural chemicals, which allow sunlight through, and it traps warmth near the ground. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the greenhouse effect. But we have been we've been pouring Tabasco sauce on our ice cream sundae and then wondering why it tastes funny. We've been belching all this additional greenhouse warming gases into the atmosphere. Every time we burn coal or oil or natural gas, agriculture is part of this as well, releasing carbon into the atmosphere. But the most likely explanation is it's us. The good news is, there are solutions, and we're already, I think, pointing in the right direction. We just need to turn up the dial and go faster.
Which is maybe a different thing than what you were saying 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just, call me crazy, but I don't think there's anything political about acknowledging reality, whether it's a deadly virus, or whether it's the fact that, hey, actions have consequences, and maybe burning all this coal and oil might impact the composition of the atmosphere and trap, you know, warmth closer to the ground. And this is not a new theory. This was first postulated back in the mid-1800s. And since then, the evidence has grown ever stronger. And your question, Katya, about the faith approach, I guess what I was trying to get to was that some people are driven by science.
Mm-hmm.
Others may be driven more by faith. They may be skeptical of science for a long list of reasons. And so I'm a Christian, have been for a long time, and every major faith group, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, has a reverence for creation, for God's creation. And so this is simply a matter of stewardship. We are called to be stewards in everything we do. Luke 16:2 summarizes that. And so, you know, we haven't been given anything. We've been loaned an amazing planet, an amazing home. And I think we have an obligation as people of faith to keep things in good shape for, you know, our kids and their kids and generations to come. And so I wrote a book, Caring for Creation, with a former Methodist minister, Mitch Hescox. And we just tried to make sort of a biblical, faith-based rationale for at least keeping an open mind, that you may be skeptical of the scientists, but keep an open mind, because even if you don't believe the scientists, you don't believe your local meteorologist, you don't believe the experts, believe your own eyes, because the symptoms are getting harder to dismiss and deny. It's been a very bad summer for climate deniers around the world. I mean, we're getting a front row seat. We're seeing it. All the smoke we had, you know, along the North Shore, record amounts of smoke and poor air quality. And it's because 5% of Canada's forests have burned down this summer.
Yeah.
An area the size of Florida. And we are downwind often of these smoke plumes. And so we're seeing more symptoms, and those symptoms are going to become even more obvious in the years to come. And I think we have a moral obligation to our kids and their kids to speak up and to try to be part of the solution.
Yeah. Wonderful. Which leads me right into this presentation you have coming up, climate change localized to us right here in the Northland and localized to now, 2023. You say resilience is key. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you mean by that? Just give us a not a total spoiler alert, but maybe a little bit of a spoiler alert.
Sure. Absolutely. And look, a lot of people are freaked out about this. And I think young people especially are very concerned. This expression, eco-anxiety, is real.
Yeah,
young people are worried about the world they are inheriting. And frankly, they're blaming older people, and I think rightfully so, for sitting on their butts and sitting on their hands and not doing something sooner to try to avoid these problems.
Yeah.
And so I have a 3.5-year-old grandson. His name is Jordan, and he is an amazing, loving bundle of energy. And his birth sort of was a kick in the butt for me to start thinking about legacy. And I want Jordan to experience the same Minnesota that I was blessed to be able to experience, you know, with fishing, with our lakes, our amazing forests, the North Woods in general. Just, we have something very special here. We live in a resort, and I think most people want to keep it that way.
Right.
And so I wrote a book called Caring for Creation. That was the one that was geared to, you know, people of faith, trying to reach out to conservatives and evangelicals, people who might be able to keep an open mind about climate change and trying to make the case. And I felt compelled to write a book for kids called A Kid's Guide to Saving the Planet. It's Not Hopeless and We're Not Helpless. And I wanted that book not to be just gloom and doom. And it's geared to 10-year-olds. I my goal was not to scare anybody, but to talk about other young people that are already stepping up and coming up with new inventions that require less carbon, and to try to be optimistic and empower them to be part of the solution. So, yeah, I'm going to be talking about the symptoms, how it's affecting the weather patterns in the Northland, how we're already seeing some of the effects, but also try to leave people empowered and hopeful and optimistic. And I am optimistic. Most days In spite of the gloom and doom and the crazy headlines from around the world, I think we will figure this out and avoid a worst-case scenario. We need to go faster with renewable energy. We need to methodically, thoughtfully phase out fossil fuels. What worked in the 1970s is not going to work in the 2020s and the 2030s. And so we need to change course, and we need smart people. We need entrepreneurs creating new inventions. And we need, I think, political leaders at a local, state, and national level who have a respect for science. You can have faith in something more than science, and I do, and many people do. But I think we need to elect people who are not chronic climate deniers and who accept the science and want to be on the right side of science and the right side of history. And so, you know, 50 years from now, people are going to look back and think, you know, we lost our minds. Why didn't we do things faster?
Yeah.
Couldn't we see the forest through the trees? And so we have some culpability here, and I think all of us can be part of the solution. And so My goal is to just, I've been going around the state. I've done hundreds of talks here in the Twin Cities, but I'm trying to get out into greater Minnesota and talk about the local changes, because everybody wants to know, rightfully so, how has it affected my hometown? Because things seem off, right? The growing season is longer. It's more humid in the summer. Winters are increasingly fickle. We're seeing a little more rain and ice in midwinter. And, you know, farmers around the state have been noticing the changes. They deal with the weather every single day. They're very sensitive to even minor changes in the patterns. And so the goal, again, is not to scare people. The goal is to lay out the science and talk about what's been happening in the Northland. We are somewhat inoculated, somewhat protected from the worst effects of climate change for now. You hear about, you know, northern Minnesota and Wisconsin being a climate haven. We are blessed to have a big, deep lake right next to us.
I know.
And that's going to help us. It's not going to mean that we are immune from changes in climate, but certainly the long-term outlook looks much, much better for Minnesota, Wisconsin than it does for Florida and Texas and California. We will be in much better shape, and I hate to break it to you. Some of those people who thought they would be retiring in Florida or Arizona, they're coming back. Mm-hmm. They will... A percentage of them will change their minds and come back to Minnesota, where, thank God, we don't have to worry about fresh water supplies and, you know, going out on a summer day and getting into trouble. I mean, I have friends in Arizona. I think they're up to like 56 days hotter than 110.
Oh.
And I just, I can't imagine that. And I know we have tough winters. But again, the northern tier of the U.S. will be in much, much better shape than coastal areas with rising seas and much of the deep south. I mean, the summer's just, you know, oppressive and getting worse. And so, you know, we're in a good spot. And I thank God every day that I live in Minnesota. But the goal, this talk on September 30th, Katya, is to lay out the science, the evidence, and, you know, hopefully talk about solutions, talk about how all of us can be part of the inevitable clean energy economy. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. And I hope you do get some kids there. You never know. I know that we have talked to a lot of kids along the North Shore about climate change, and especially right in that fifth grade range, pretty close to your book target age, I think. And I do find that kids, like, for one thing, they don't have so much guilt associated with this. They don't know any other world. They just hear that there's a problem and we're going to all need to solve it. And I just find it's really fun to talk to kids about it. And You know, and young people, the number of them that whose work centers around some level of restoring something or healing something, it just seems like we are on our way, like you say. But the faster we do it, the less suffering there's going to be. And it sounds like that your talk is really going to both inform and uplift. At least I hope so. It sounds wonderful. Hopefully you'll get a good crowd. Is there anything, we're kind of running short on time, but I would love for you to have a chance to get any more tidbits in of messages you'd like to make sure people hear or reasons they should come to the talk. I do think that you stand a good chance of getting some people to come who maybe haven't had climate change on the front burner the way some people have had it on the front burner for decades now, or at least years. But like you said, it really takes getting everyone involved. And I know we've talked before about pricing carbon, which I know I still believe is the easiest way to get everyone on board with the least amount of effort. Are you going to bring up carbon pricing at all, specific political solutions? Or are you going to stick mostly to the hundreds of other personal and community level things that we can do to work on climate change and to be more resilient as communities, as you say?
Sure. No, that's a great question. I think a tax on carbon makes some sense, but you know, a lot of people freak out when they hear the T word, tax. You know, we're taxed enough, and I feel the same way that most people feel.
Yeah.
I, as an entrepreneur, I'm on my seventh and final business. I like the word incentive more than I like the word tax.
Okay.
Dangle carrots and incentivize the marketplace to come up with clean energy solutions. And that's happening at a national and regional level. Again, we just need to turn up the dial and go faster. I don't have the answer key. Climate change really touches everything we do. And so you can't be an expert on everything. And most of you are not even an expert on the weather, but I'm trying and I'm keeping an open mind. And I think that is what I would ask people to do. You may be skeptical, and I think everybody should be skeptical about everything. The biggest skeptics on the planet are scientists. Science is organized skepticism.
Yes, fact, it is.
We have thousands of these experts all saying the same thing. I would just say, you know, keep an open mind. The world isn't ending, not yet. It is warming. That will have some benefits. Maybe our climate won't be quite as harsh as it was in the 1960s and 1970s. We're already seeing that. We're not seeing the incredible, you know, 20, 30, 40 below temperatures that we did even 30, 40 years ago. There will be some silver linings, but I think the negatives outweigh the positives. I just ask that people keep an open mind. We should be leaving politics out of this. We should just see the world the way it is, the way we've made it. And there will be liberal solutions. There will be conservative solutions. I mean, let's put everything on the table and may the best idea, the best practices win. But we shouldn't, again, we shouldn't be debating reality. Acknowledging climate change does not make you liberal. It makes you literate. It means that, you know, you value evidence and data. And I think everybody can keep an open mind. And again, at some point, it's okay to change your mind. You have the freedom to change your mind about anything. And frankly, I respect people who change their minds based on evidence and science and data. And I guess the overarching message, too, is I acknowledge the science, but I have a faith in something more. And as a Christian, as a person of faith, I think we have a holy obligation to be part of the solution and to try to make things better for our kids. If you just, you know, say, well, you know, it may or may not be happening and, you know, my kids will clean up the mess. That to me as a parent and a grandparent, just, that's a non-starter.
Mm.
I, we do have an obligation to look out for our kids. Maybe it's the one thing that unites us. We love our kids. We love our grandkids. We would do anything for them. Well,
right.
One thing we can do is keep an open mind and, you know, hopefully be part of the solution and avoid a worst case scenario. I mean, we've already warmed about 2.5 degrees globally. Here in the Northland, we've warmed 4 or 5 degrees, and we're already seeing the effects of that. If we warm 7, 8, 10 degrees, we're living on a different planet. And so we have to pull out all the stops, find ways to phase out fossil fuels. And look, I've benefited from fossil fuels just like everybody else, but it's unsustainable. It's like smoking, you know, 10 packs of cigarettes a day and believing that it isn't going to affect your health. Of course it will. We had people debating smoking back in the 1970s. Now most rational people acknowledge, yeah, you know, smoking increases your risk of heart disease and lung cancer. But, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, it was still an open question. You know, well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. There's a lot of disinformation and misinformation. And I think we just need to look at the world as it is, acknowledge reality, and try to figure out bipartisan ways to turn up the dial on clean energy, wind, solar, geothermal. It's a long list. And turn down the dial on fossil fuels.
I'm speaking with Paul Douglas, meteorologist and entrepreneur, who will be speaking at the Coppertop Church on Saturday, September 30th at 10 a.m., the topic being climate change in the Northland in 2023. Symptoms are stronger and resilience is key. Thank you so much, Paul, for being with us here at KTWH. And I think you will see a lot of people at the Coppertop next Saturday. Have a good program.
I hope so. It's not going to snow. In fact, I think it's going to stay unusually mild with 70s deep into October. Some of this is climate change. Some of this is a brewing super El Nino. But I think we're going to have an extra long and lukewarm autumn this year. Winter has not been canceled, but I think it will be postponed by at least a few weeks. But I appreciate your interest in this, gotcha. Thank you so much, and appreciate your time and interest.
Thank you. You take care. Bye-bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.